Chapter 5. Hugo shivered in the night air out on the step as he watched Bert whistle his chauffeur swing on the cranking handle until the Lagonda fired. He held open the back door himself for Eunice and Franklin to climb in. Dorothy and Hannah had come out on the steps to see them off. He kissed Dorothy, and that meant it was all right for him to kiss Hannah, too. She smiled. "You're very generous, Hugo, and I love the emeralds." He had to turn away quickly and get in his Buick, a much less showy vehicle. They were both waving as he moved off in the wake of the Lagonda. Hannah tantalized him. He told himself last month it was his own imagination that tantalized. He knew now it was not, and he would never be free of it. Already they'd left the suburbs of Prenton and Bebbington behind, and he was driving through lush country. Raby Mere was surrounded by large farms with open fields, a rural oasis. He drove past Raby Hall, dipped down to the mere itself where the ducks rippled the surface in the moonlight. The road narrowed and began to wind up through leafy chestnut trees. His house was about halfway between Raby Hall and Poulton Hall. Built in a 3-acre clearing in the trees, it was more secluded than either. Bert Whistle was already opening the rear door of the Lagonda when Hugo pulled up behind. He'd leave him to garage the Buick tonight. Inns Hall was built of red sandstone and partly clad with creeper, the great orangery windows glinting in the moonlight. Fortunately, it wasn't too near the mere itself, because that had become a popular beauty spot, attracting crowds on sunny weekends to rent the skiffs and rowing boats by the hour. He'd planted more trees on the lower fields when he'd first bought the place, screening it off more securely.
"A nightcap, Franklin?"
"No, thank you. I've had more than enough for one night. Bed is what I need now. I do thank you both for your hospitality."
Hugo smiled. He'd not have asked if he'd thought it likely Franklin would accept. Franklin was old before his time, set in his ways, and Dorothy was such a child still. He was far too old for her. Hugo couldn't understand the attraction. Couldn't understand why Eunice encouraged such a match. He was pouring a last brandy for himself in the library when she came in and closed the door carefully.
"What on earth made you give emeralds like that to Hannah?" She was at her most shrewish. Her antagonism made him respond in kind.
"Didn't you like them?"
"Of course I liked them. Far too good for her. They looked more expensive than the pearls you gave Dorothy."
"They were. Pearls are more suitable for a young girl."
Dorothy couldn't carry off emeralds like that. Not yet. Probably not ever, he thought.
"You overdid it. You made far too much fuss of Hannah."
That made him catch his breath, but Eunice knew there were other women in his life. He'd told her straight out there would have to be. She couldn't be thinking that Hannah might be one of them.
"I feel sorry for her," he said. "She wants a family, and it doesn't come."
Eunice clicked her tongue with exasperation. She'd heard all that before, and was not to be sidetracked.
"Expensive gifts of jewelry like that should only be accepted from a husband."
"What about Dorothy's pearls?"
"They are not so expensive. Anyway, she is a blood relation. Hannah is not."
"Still a relation."
He never would understand Eunice. He'd been 20 when they married, and head over heels in love. Eunice was a year older. It hadn't taken him long to discover it was the biggest mistake he'd ever made. He put it down to the impatience of youth. He couldn't wait, couldn't believe she wasn't all she seemed. He'd been bowled over by her beauty and her pretty clothes, but they had nothing in common, nothing to share.
"They're both family, Eunice," he said more gently.
She had never taken to Hannah.
"Great strapping woman," she'd said. "Lower middle class."
Hannah's father had been a solicitor running his own small practice that dealt with humdrum conveyancing work.
"I can't think what came over, Matt."
Hugo sighed. It was almost the only thing his son had done of which he did approve. He envied him, Hannah.
"Keep your hands off her, Hugo,"
Eunice's voice was suddenly more waspish. "Hannah's too close to home. If that ever got out, I don't know what I'd say to the other members of the Moral Welfare Committee." He blazed up. "I've never laid a finger on Hannah. I think you and your snooping Moral Welfare Committee have all got filthy minds, Eunice. Prurient minds, poking your noses into other people's business, looking for dirt where there isn't any. Somebody has to look after poor fallen girls. Nobody has fallen further than you."
There was no doubt in his mind now about what she and her parents had set out to do. They'd believed they could part him from his money without Eunice having to marry him. He knew they saw him as no great match. Money was necessary, but they wanted social status too, and at the time he didn't have any. He believed that when he refused to give her father money, she'd seen marriage as the only way to get it, and deliberately set out to trap him into it. She'd shown a wildly passionate nature at the time, and a cold disinterest in him since. He heard she'd had a previous suitor who had pleased both her and her parents more, except that he'd been almost penniless. With hindsight, he could see he'd been chosen because he was better able to provide. "I'm well regarded by society now, Hugo. You know that." Her blue eyes regarded him belligerently.
"Because you hide what you are. I should have had the sense to divorce you years ago."
He thought long and hard about it, been on the point of doing it, even talked of it to Eunice. There had been 100 fresh starts over the years. All had failed. Hundreds of disappointments, hundreds of quarrelsome rows. Now they spent more time apart, it suited them better that way.
"Don't start nagging about divorce again, Hugo."
"Go to bed," he said coldly.
Matthew was born later in the year they married, and the year after that Cecil Schofield was made bankrupt. It was a 5-day wonder. He owed more than any other bankrupt in the last 2 decades. Eunice saw it as a terrible disgrace. Hugo was quite sure she'd known it was coming, but afterwards she'd convinced herself it had never happened. The passing years had made him realize she was a silly woman. As an adult, she couldn't deny herself anything. She had a good appetite and a sweet tooth, and soon lost her figure in pillows of fat. Hard to believe, looking at her now, that she'd once been a very pretty girl. Still, 40 years had passed, and time played havoc with a woman's beauty. Eunice wanted the world to stand still. She wanted to keep the traditions and privileges she'd enjoyed in Queen Victoria's time. She hated the servant shortage and the erosion of class differences the Great War had brought. She still did everything she could to enhance her own status in the world, and naturally she wanted a husband she would not be ashamed of. Hugo's social status had improved with the years. Looking back, they each had gained just enough from the union to keep it going. Like her father, Eunice was a profligate spender and could not control money. He provided that. He'd been young and had wanted all the trappings of wealth. She had found Inns Hall for him and chosen the furniture. She had style. She sent him to the right tailors, and above all, she had the right contacts and knew the right people to point him in the right direction. He would have found it more difficult to expand and build on his first business if it had not been for Eunice. Hannah thought Dorothy had gained confidence overnight. She wasn't at all worried about talking to Grandpa about her stay in Switzerland. "For heaven's sake," she said to her stepmother as they sat in the back of the Lagonda that Eunice had sent over to fetch them. "Grandma has already accepted everything we've said. Why should he not believe us? You're a bag of nerves. That's your problem." Raby Mere was deserted as they drove through. The rowing boats were lined up on the edge of the crystal clear water. There were no customers at the Mill House Tea Gardens, although it was sunny. It was a weekday, and most people were at work. Eunice pecked her cheek as usual when she arrived, and Hannah saw her eyes fix on the emeralds she was wearing.
"Did I give you to understand it was a party? Emeralds like those are better kept for evening, dear.
they give the appearance of being a little too overdressed for tea in the garden. Her smile was superior, her tone condescending. Hannah's fingers felt for her emeralds defensively. She wore them on a plain dress of dark green linen that came high at the neck. I wanted to wear them, but Matt and I hardly ever go out in the evening.
I'm glad you have. Hugo came to her rescue. It gives me pleasure to see them.
Come on outside, Eunice said coldly, leading the way into the garden. A table had been set up under the trees.
I see Dorothy is wearing her pearls too, Hugo added.
Pearls are correct for daytime, Hugo. Eunice was frostier than ever. Even you should have noticed that by now.
Let's hear about Switzerland instead, he said, rubbing his hands. You've told me nothing about it yet.
Dorothy started recounting the same facts in identical words to those she'd used last night when she'd told her grandmother. She even sounded a little bored with it all. Would Eunice notice? Hannah dared not look at her. Instead, she found Hugo studying her intently. She tried to smile at him and instill a little enthusiasm into her manner as she talked of the mountains and lakes she'd never seen. But Hugo wouldn't be surprised if she sounded flat. He'd think it was because Eunice had needled her about the emeralds. Tea was barely finished when Eunice invited Dorothy indoors to see a sable cape she meant to give her. Hannah wasn't asked to accompany them. She continued to sip her tea. Hugo got up to refill their cups.
"You mustn't mind what Eunice says," he said gently.
"No, no, I don't." She didn't know what made her add, "It isn't that." She froze in panic, knowing she'd invited a question she mustn't answer.
"I know," he murmured.
That made it worse. Her heart was pounding like an engine in her chest.
"I do understand and sympathize. I can see you're on edge, Hannah."
She raised her eyes to his face in disbelief, feeling drained. What was he getting at?
"Eunice and I have been through it, too. You'd like a family, wouldn't you? And it doesn't come."
"Yes." She could breathe again. It wasn't what she'd expected. "Oh, yes."
"Eunice would say such things are not to be spoken of, but within the family, like this, it might be of some comfort to you. Few know there are downsides to marrying into the Mortimer family."
He got up and cut himself another slice of cake, offered one to her. She shook her head. She moistened her lips.
"You did have Matt." "We both wanted more children."
"Eunice?"
"Hope faded and she was bitterly disappointed. She went through hell because she couldn't. I sense you feel the same."
"Yes, I think of little else," she admitted.
"Perhaps, Hannah, you feel it more because you've been denied even one child. Perhaps Matt feels it less because he already has two."
"Yes," she said, "but why us?"
Hugo shook his head. "We asked ourselves that. It seems a normal desire, to have a child, to be a parent, but when it can't be fulfilled it brings the most desperate anguish."
"I found it hard to believe I wouldn't,"
Hannah swallowed.
She couldn't tell Hugo she'd found it hard because she'd already had a child and proved she could.
"But now?" he asked.
"It's a goal I can't achieve. I tell myself it's just a basic biological drive, but yes, it fills me with anger and frustration that I can't have what I want."
Eunice found it unendurable.
"But we have to endure. Matt is against adoption."
"Eunice never wanted to adopt, but she took over Greg and Dorothy. They were an outlet for her maternal instinct. I'm afraid that upset you too."
"I couldn't get close to them."
"But isn't that why? Eunice was already acting as their mother."
"Perhaps."
"You do understand the problem most probably lies with Matt."
"He doesn't think so."
"I have a problem with fertility. I was told it was hereditary. It isn't easy for a man to accept. I found it hard. Makes me feel less of a man. Brings feelings of inadequacy." "Hugo, I can't believe you ever had feelings of inadequacy." She didn't quite hide her smile.
"We all have feelings like that. The difference is, I put them firmly behind me."
"Thank you for telling me," she said. His hand rested on her shoulder, imparting warmth. She felt close to him.
Hannah looked round her home and rejoiced that she was back where she had electricity and a decent hot water system. She wrote a letter of thanks to her friend Clarissa, asking how Maisie was managing and whether the infant thrived. She was missing Clary's company. She felt unsettled and weighed down with guilt. It didn't help to see Dorothy throw herself into a round of shopping and social engagements. She was exuberantly high-spirited, and her chocolate box beauty blossomed.
"Grandma wants to bring me out next summer," she said, "but Franklin doesn't want to delay our wedding. He says he's waited long enough."
"Give yourself time," Hannah advised. "You'll feel better if—"
"I'm over all that," she said scornfully.
Hannah found it frightening to see Dorothy reacting in exactly the same way she had before. Now the birth of her baby was behind her, Dorothy was prepared to pretend for the rest of her life that it hadn't happened. Hadn't Hannah tried that too? She shuddered again. For her it hadn't been possible. Her thoughts went often to the child she'd had. She felt a throbbing need to know how she was growing up. She expected Dorothy to feel the same, and wanted to stop her making the same mistake. "You're still too close to it. It must be a raw wound, and there's no hurry." Hannah was afraid Matt was pushing Dorothy into this marriage. He wanted it because it would end his responsibility for her.
"Don't be pushed."
"I won't be pushed ever again. All that's over and done with. Like you, I've put it behind me. It's what you did, after all. Marry someone else on the rebound." That made Hannah anxious. She didn't want anyone else to overhear such remarks.
"I was in love with your father," she managed, and then worried that she'd used the past tense.
Dorothy kept referring to what she'd told her in confidence, and it made Hannah shiver. She was afraid her stepdaughter would do it in Matt's hearing, and he'd ask what she meant. At supper last night, she'd taken Dorothy to task for saying she'd be home for lunch, then not returning. "If you telephone when you change your mind, it would save cook a lot of trouble."
"Sorry," Dorothy said lightly. "I have my faults, I know, but then we both have. You and I make the same mistakes, Hannah. You should understand."
She'd felt the heat rush to her cheeks. The girl was openly goading her. She was thankful to find Matt engrossed in some discussion with Greg, but was afraid she'd have to tell him before Dorothy did. It was the only way she could put an end to it. She received a reply from Clarissa.
"Dear Hannah, I do wish you'd been here to share things as they happened, but I've good news and bad.
First, the good news. I'm totally thrilled to tell you I've managed to rent the Dower House again. Such luck! It seems Dr. Moore has elderly and ailing parents living down in Kent and wants them closer. He's moving them in this week. Leo was keen that we should live there, and of course this has stopped him dead in his tracks. He was afraid we wouldn't manage without the rent. Maisie reports that the infant Elizabeth is putting on weight and is always hungry. She sleeps well between feeds and is giving no trouble. Now comes the bad part. I was right about Maisie's children having scarlet fever. Dr. Moore sent the two older ones to the fever hospital to reduce the chance of spreading it to the others. Tragically, the eldest, Charlie, died last week. We were all terribly upset. Now Maisie's youngest child, Joey, has gone down with it. He's only 5 months old, but he's big and strong for his age, while Charlie was small and always puny. We all have high hopes he'll pull through. Maisie is bereft, poor soul. I'm afraid the Parry children, our Cowman's family, have caught it too. Dr. Moore has forbidden me to go near any of them, in case I bring it back to Lucy and the boys. I do miss not having you here for long gossipy sessions. Your friend, Clarissa. Hannah sat back appalled. She should never have left Elizabeth in that terrible place. What attention would she be getting from Maisie now? She'd barely coped when things were normal. She felt tears pricking in her eyes and told herself she must talk to Matt. After a time, she got up and went to the bathroom to slap cold water against her face. In the mirror, her face looked pale. She had such large, strong features, so why wasn't she strong enough to cope with Matt? She was always finding out too late she'd done the wrong thing.
"I don't understand you, Hannah. You did so much to help Dorothy," he'd said that evening when they were going to bed. "But now we've got her through with reputation intact, you're endangering everything by being miserable and depressed."
"It's the baby."
"I know that, but you must see it would be quite impossible to bring it here."
"It haunts me, Matt."
"It's all over. Put it behind you. Why should it bother you more than it does Dorothy?"
Hannah shuddered, knowing the answer to that. Matt was never generous with his sympathy. He was rather an aloof, self-sufficient man, wrapped up in his own needs, and his pressing concern now was to put his family affairs back into that peaceful rut they'd been in before Dorothy's troubles. Hannah knew she had his ear. He wanted to soothe her back to normality. Now was the moment to tell him. She had to do it because Dorothy meant to let it slip out before much longer. Hannah wanted to hear Matt say he understood, and surely he must after this. She forced herself to go on. "Is she going to tell Franklin Flower?"
"Of course not."
"Do you think that's wise?"
"Fortunately for Dorothy, I think he's fairly innocent about women. I've heard it said Franklin's more interested in making money than making love. He's put off marriage till he's 36, and Mother's failed to discover any previous women in his life. I hope he'll never know."
"I meant," Hannah said, determined to keep to the point, "but it changes a girl's thinking. She may not be able to forget the baby."
"Dorothy showed no interest in her babies. She wanted no funeral for the dead one, and since it was stillborn, we managed to get away without."
"But in time, if she changes her mind and decides she wants a family, then she can once she's married."
"That's what I thought when you married me," she dared.
Matt sighed noisily.
"I only wish we could, Hannah. I know you're disappointed."
"But keeping Franklin in ignorance?" She'd really pondered on that.
"What he doesn't know, he won't worry about."
"I thought that once," she dared again. "But later she might feel a need to talk about it. She might want to get it off her mind."
"Hannah, the baby was never on Dorothy's mind. Why delve so deeply into the psychology of it? If Dorothy wants to tell him at some point in the future, she can. Far better he do it when the marriage is fait accompli and they've both settled down.
Wouldn't it destroy his trust?" She knew she sounded agonized. She was rigid with tension.
"How would I know? You're taking it all too hard."
Hannah closed her eyes. She had to force herself to go on.
"No, I'm not, Matt. You see, it happened to me."
The silence seemed to throb in her ears. As it lengthened, she had to look. He understood now. She knew she'd never forget Matt's face at that moment. His mouth gaped, shock glazed his eyes. He'd frozen with his pajama jacket half on.
"You mean you?"
He was choking. Suddenly she turned away, horrified at what she'd done. She'd wanted it off her chest. Now she was frightened.
"Yes, I had a baby."
Matt's grasp was rough on her arm, swinging her back to face him. She dared to meet his gaze.
"I was 17, like Dorothy." "But why didn't you tell me?"
It was his turn to agonize. She found it an effort to stay calm.
"For the same reason Dorothy won't tell Franklin Flower. You said it was best." "Not for us."
His face flushed with anger.
"The man, who was he?"
"You said before it was better not to know."
Hannah knew she was breaking down. She could feel tears prickling in her eyes. She'd imagined herself telling Matt 100 times, and none of them had been like this.
She'd expected him to put his arms round her, to be loving and forgiving.
"I've got to know now," he said bitterly. "You can't just leave me hanging in space, wondering about it, imagining the worst."
Hannah swallowed.
"For me, nothing could have been worse. The nuns took me in 6 weeks before my baby was due, and kept me for 6 weeks afterwards. There were 7 other girls in the same situation. They let us all know we were fallen women."
"Who was the father? I've a right to know."
Hannah's mouth was dry, her voice not much more than a whisper.
"He was older than me, worked in the same firm."
"You weren't his secretary?"
He sounded aghast.
"No, he was a salesman."
"Good God, Hannah! This is a bit hard to take. You're my wife. What did he sell?"
"Office stationery."
She was petrified. This was going all wrong.
"Go on,"
he ordered.
"I suppose you'd call him the office Romeo. He was playing the field, but I didn't realize that at the time. I was over-innocent at 17. I loved him. I thought he loved me. Once he found out about the baby, he didn't want to know. Dropped me like a stone."
"A tawdry tale, isn't it?"
The sneer in his voice stabbed hurtfully.
"Yes. At least Dorothy can tell herself things might have been different if Lancelin Tolman had lived."
"To hell with Lancelin Tolman! I don't know how you could have kept quiet all these years."
"I wanted to tell you. Was on the point of doing it many times. I didn't dare till you encouraged Dorothy to do the same. That made me think you'd understand."
"I understand, all right. I just can't stomach it."
Matt was bristling, pushing up his monk's rim of fine brown hair.
"You said for Dorothy it was the best thing."
"Best for Dorothy and best for you, not best for me."
He was seething with half-suppressed rage.
"I mean, how can I trust you after this?"
"It was years ago, Matt, before I knew you."
"You recovered well. What raised your expectations? You married up."
"You sound like your mother."
He sighed noisily.
"I expect you still think of him. Compare me with him."
Hannah turned away, sickened. There was to be no sympathy from Matt after all.
"I often think of my baby. I signed her away. She went for adoption. She'll be nearly 13 now. I do hope she never finds herself in the same awful situation."
"So, that's what drove you to tell me."
He was spoiling for a fight. Hannah pressed her fingers to her lips. She mustn't say any more. She was making matters worse.
"I knew the baby was playing on your mind. Now I know why your conscience is heavy. This alters everything. You disgust me, Hannah."
She heard him run downstairs. The front door slammed, reverberating through the house. Tears were welling up, stinging her eyes. Telling Matt had driven a further wedge between them and deepened her misery. It was yet another mistake.